My name's Rebecca, and I'm going to be bringing you the message here this morning. And it's Mother's Day, so I'm going to start with a mum's story. Not long after Michaela was born, they looked like that. When Enzo had just turned three, I picked him up from kindy, and then we headed off to the supermarket to grab a couple of things. And as we got out of the car, we saw Jim having a coffee with someone in Nish, so of course we popped in, gate crashed. I got Michaela out of her capsule, we had cuddles, Enzo had a little cake. But once Enzo had finished, it was time to go. Enzo was ready the moment he decided it was the time for the supermarket. I, however, had to get Michaela back in her cardigan, put her hat on, put her back in the capsule, do up the straps, get my own jacket. And while I was getting the baby ready, Enzo had made his way to the door of the cafe, on the opposite side, as far as you can get. And he yelled at me, "Mummy, it's time to go. Make a good choice. One, two, three." And then he was gone. And it was in that moment that I realized just how much of an influence I have on my child and how grateful I am that he was only counting me down. We've had many of these moments where I've seen the direct impact of my life on our children. It shows me how important my role is as someone who influences Enzo and Michaela, how they interact with others, how they talk with others, and how they see themselves. As parents, we have such a huge part to play in our children's lives, and not just in their lives, but in a generational way. Because you see, what we do and how we live our lives has an impact and effect on those who are yet to come in our family. What we do in life echoes down the generations. I was thinking about this as I was preparing for this message, and I was thinking of looking at mothers in the Bible and maybe looking at how the Bible talks about how we are to treat our mothers, and God just dropped the name Mephibosheth into my mind. And I don't know how many of you know this story. I love it. I love it how David looked for people related to his late best friend, and when he found a crippled son, he looked after him. I just wasn't sure how that fit into a Mother's Day message. But thankfully, God knew what he was doing. And when you look into this story deeply, you see really clearly about how our actions echo down through the generations. For this sermon, I'm going to need to do a little bit of background work, so I'm going to tell you the story of Saul and David and Jonathan, and then we're going to read our passage for today. So when Saul was king of Israel, he was not always the most God-honoring person, and eventually the Spirit of God was withdrawn from him. He was left to his own devices. During this time, he became incredibly jealous of David, who was doing great and mighty things with God at his side. The jealousy became too much, and he tried on numerous occasions to kill him. King Saul had a son named Jonathan, with whom David had an incredible friendship. And when Saul turned murderous towards David, Jonathan passed him information and made sure that he escaped to safety. And these two men made a covenant of friendship with each other, and they made it to their descendants forever. Saul, unfortunately, continued his decline and ended up dead, along with his three sons. And after this, David was made king and he did a wonderful job. After a little while, and we don't know how long it was, we pick up the story for today. If you're following along, it's in 2 Samuel chapter 9. We're going to read the whole thing. It is on the screen as well, though. David asked, "Is anyone left from the royal house of Saul? If there is, I want to be kind to him because of Jonathan." Ziba was a servant in Saul's family. David sent for him to come and see him. The king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" "I'm ready to serve you," he replied. The king asked, "Isn't there anyone still alive from the royal house of Saul? God has been very kind to me. I would like to be kind to that person in the same way." Ziba answered the king, "A son of Jonathan is still living. Both his feet were hurt so that he can't walk." "Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, "He is in the town of Lodabar. He's staying at the house of Makkah, a son of Amiel." So King David had Mephibosheth brought from Maachah's house in Lodabar. Mephibosheth came to David. He was the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul. Mephibosheth bowed down to David to show him respect. David said, "Mephibosheth." "I'm ready to serve you," he replied. "Don't be afraid," David told him. "You can be sure that I will be kind to you because of your father Jonathan. I will give you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and I will always provide what you need." Mephibosheth bowed down to David and said, "Who am I? Why should you pay attention to me? I'm nothing but a dead dog." Then the king sent for Saul's servant Ziba. He said to him, "I'm giving your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants must farm the land for him. You must bring in the crops. Then he'll be taken care of. I'll always provide what he needs." Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "I'll do anything you command me to do. You are my king and my master." So David provided what Mephibosheth needed. He treated him like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah. All the members of Ziba's family became servants of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem. The king always provided what he needed. Both of his feet were hurt so that he could not walk. Now, the first thing I want to look at is how what we do has an impact on future generations. Back in 1956, a man named Thomas Holland decided that his family was going to be a church-going family. So Thomas, his wife, and their four children started to attend the local church. And this had benefits for him and his family. They were part of a church family, they had support in the local community, and they grew up knowing about God. Thomas was a quietly practical man. He was the type of man who, if they were having a meeting about fixing the roof, before it was finished, he'd be up a ladder having a look to see if he could fix it himself. He loved his family and instilled good morals in his children. But when Thomas made the decision to be a church-going family, he could not have known that 66 years later, his grandchildren, Enzo and Michaela, would be attending a church and be surrounded by an amazing church family. I don't think he would have considered that his granddaughter would be finding joy in preaching about Jesus, who has made all the difference in her life. All because he made the choice to be a church-going family. Our actions echo down the generations. As we look at the story of David and Jonathan and Mephibosheth, we see this idea of actions echoing down the generations. When David was 15 years old, he killed the giant Goliath. After he lived at the palace with King Saul. And during the 7 years that he was there, he formed a really close friendship with Saul's son, Jonathan. When Saul started acting against the will of God and started to plot the murder of David, Jonathan acted in his friend's best interest. He passed on information to David and he was able to avoid the king. When the plots continued, Jonathan made sure that David was able to escape. They made a covenant at that time. In 1 Samuel 20, we read how Jonathan asked David, "Do not ever cut off your kindness from my family." They made that covenant that included their descendants forever. Now, this is a beautiful moment between friends, but it is years later that it has even more significance. After Jonathan, his two brothers, and King Saul died, Jonathan's family fled in order to escape any retributive killings. The nurse who was in charge of Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth, dropped him, and he was left with damaged feet and wasn't able to walk for the rest of his life. He was 5 years old when this happened. Whether he remembered before the accident or not, we don't know. But what we do know is that he would have had a really, really hard life. In these times, having a disability was something that excluded you from so many aspects of life. So not only was he not able to do things for himself, he was marred by being related to the disgraced King Saul, and he was seen as somewhat of an outcast. His self-image is made very clear in verse 8 of our passage when he says, "Who am I? Why should you pay attention to me? I am nothing but a dead dog. To me, this indicates how he feels about his own life. Comparing himself to a dog is quite a different thing than you might think of it today. Today, you would simply think it was someone who needed help from others. But dogs were talked about in a very negative way in the Bible. They were talked about as being devious, eating dead bodies, and licking the sores of sick people. Mephibosheth's self-image is so low. He sees himself as poor, unknown, and about as useful as not only a dog, but a dead dog. Yet in spite of what he thinks of himself, he is invited to stand before the king. He appears to be assuming the worst of this as well, because in verse 7, David has to assure him, "Do not be afraid." The kindness that he experienced must have been overwhelming. To go from being the leftovers of a disgraced family and living as an outcast and a cripple to dining at the king's table was incredible. He was given his grandfather's land and 35 people to work it for him. He was provided for in a practical way, and then he was elevated in status. He was to have a permanent place at the king's table. He would be hanging out with the leaders of the land, learning from them, talking to them, being one of them. David didn't just give him land and leave him. He kept on making sure that he was provided for and treated him as one of the king's sons. And all of this came about because his father was a good man. I find this such a beautiful picture because it is what we experience as followers of Christ. We get to live a life that is blessed with peace and purpose, not because of our goodness, but because our Father is good. It is also such an encouragement to me that the good we do is not just good on its own, but has far-reaching consequences. You see, Jonathan's friendship to David was incredible and beneficial. It saved David's life, but it also had far-reaching benefits for his son and future generations. Just like my grandfather made a choice that has impacted my life, we need to be mindful that the choices we make will have an impact on the generations that are to come after us. We have been encouraged through the story about how the goodness of Jonathan had a positive impact on his family, but there is also a warning in Saul's story. Saul was elevated to the station of king, but he did not honor God in his life. In just the second year of his reign, he made a sacrifice before a battle that was supposed to be performed by the high priest. When he was questioned about it, he blamed the priest for being late and then tried to justify what he had done. Because of his attitude, the Spirit of God was withdrawn from him and he was left to his own devices. And I find this to be such a sad part of the story. To have a heart so focused on yourself that God cannot work with you is just awful. And the rest of his life was one of confusion, anger, jealousy, and murder. He hoarded plunder. He had a whole priesthood murdered. He plotted and tried to carry out the murder of David for years. And he consulted a medium to try and talk with the spirit of Samuel. The one-line summary of Saul's life can be found in 1 Chronicles 10:13. And it says, "So Saul died for his unfaithfulness. He was unfaithful to the Lord in that he did not keep the command of the Lord. Moreover, he had consulted a medium seeking guidance and did not seek guidance from the Lord." Perhaps the most awful part of this story, though, is how his actions negatively impacted his family. He deprived his son of his best friend when David had to flee for his life. His three sons were killed in battle with the Philistines. And his five-year-old grandson was injured fleeing for his life. Mephibosheth suffered badly for the sins of his grandfather. And as parents, I think we need to look really carefully at our own lives and think not about how they affect us, but how they might affect those who come after us. And while these are sobering thoughts that we should take seriously, we need to look at all of these things through the lens of Christ. Because it would be very easy to look at this story and decide that the messages, If your parents were good, you will be blessed. And if your parents were bad, then you're doomed. But that, thank God, is not the case. When Christ came, he came to redeem and to set the prisoner free. That is the work of the cross. And when we think of prisoners being set free, I think we all think of physical bars that people are behind, but there's so much more in the power of the cross. God is able to set us free from any and every form of prison that there is. He is able to set us free from the prison of anger in our lives. He is able to set us free from the prison of fear and anxiety in our lives. And he is able to set us free from the prison of intergenerational sin. I want you to hear this morning. If you have come from a background of hurt and pain, God can set you free. It is easy sometimes to sit in our slavery and think that we have no choice. It is easy to blame those who came before us and live our lives as prisoners of the bad choices others have made. But that is not the way of the cross. Jesus came for freedom. In John 8:36, he says, "If the Son sets you free, you are free indeed." There's no qualifications on that, no conditions. Jesus died so that the law of sin and the negative impact on future generations can be broken. Instead of sitting in our brokenness, we need to stand up in the righteousness that Christ brings us and walk boldly into our new life of freedom. Galatians 5:1 says it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. If there is brokenness in your life from the actions of those who came before you, then you need to hear the word of the Lord to you this morning. But now, thus says the Lord, who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by your name. You are mine. The first thing David said to Mephibosheth was his name. Mephibosheth sat in brokenness and obscurity for years. But there he was standing before the king, being acknowledged personally. God has called you by name. He knows who you are and what you've been through. He knows the brokenness sowed into your life. He knows the bad habits that have formed around that brokenness. And he knows what you need in order to gain healing. He formed you and he has redeemed you and he is calling you by name. He has called you by name into freedom. And he wants to break the chains that bind you. He wants you to live in freedom so that the generations who come after you will be blessed by the life you live in Christ. You know, when we look at the life of Saul, you see a man who messed up badly and then kept on failing. And when you look at the life of King David, you also see a man who messed up badly. But his response before God was the difference. When Saul messed up, he spent time trying to justify what he'd done and blaming it on others. However, when David was confronted about his adultery and murder, when I say messed up, he really did mess up. He responded by saying, "I have sinned against the Lord." There was no denying or justifying or trying to hide. He recognized his sin and humbled himself before the Lord. He took his failings to the Lord and was restored and carried on serving him. He wasn't perfect, but the one-line summary of his life, as stated in 2 Samuel 13 and Acts 13, is that he was a man after God's own heart. His attitude was different, so his outcome was different. We need to make sure that our attitude is such that God can work with us and on us and in us. We see the consequences of these different attitudes in the lives of those who followed Saul and David. Saul's family was killed and his grandson was injured fleeing for his life. David, is part of the lineage of Christ. When I was researching for this message, I was reading the chapters surrounding chapter 9, and I started to notice a phrase that's repeated over and over. David inquired of the Lord. Once again, David inquired of the Lord. And this is how we get breakthrough in our lives. Instead of sitting in our prison of brokenness and feeling like we have no choice, we need to spend time with the Lord so that he can reach in and heal what is broken. We need to spend time with him so that he can reach in and break the chains that bind us. And we need to spend time with him so that he can start to make our lives new. Mephibosheth sat in his brokenness until David called him to the palace. Right now, Christ is calling you to his palace. He died to bring you healing. All of the healing and provision is right there. But we need to turn up at the palace and enter into a conversation with our King. Jim, if you could bring the team up, I'm just going to pray. I realize this was a really short message, but I feel like it is a very deep message. We get to choose how we respond. If we are sitting in brokenness, you might identify with one of these people this morning. You might be Mephibosheth, sitting in your brokenness, being called before the king. You might be David, inquiring of the Lord. And you might be Saul. And I want you to know that in that moment, you still have that choice to inquire of the Lord and come back, because he is a God of love and restoration. And I want to pray for our church this morning. Lord, I thank you so much for this message, that what we do affects others, that we need to be living, looking to the future for what you can and will do in the lives of our family. I thank you so much that we can choose to listen, that we can choose to allow your healing into our lives, that we can choose to sit with you instead of our brokenness. And Lord, I want to thank you for the cross. You went there for us so that all of these things can be taken care of. We have salvation and freedom and healing because of you. And that is an overwhelming and wonderful thought. And Lord, I pray for our people this morning, wherever they're sitting, Lord, that you will meet them there, that you will sit with them in their peace or in their brokenness, that you will reach into the lives of our church family, the people we love so much, and you will do a work there. And when they stand before you, they will be able to give you honor and glory for the great work that you've done. We can be excited, Lord, that what you do in our lives impacts the lives of our family yet to come. And we can be grateful that you are in control. Lord, I pray over our people that you will be here, working in our midst, doing what only you can do. In Jesus' name.